Actually, the most interesting thing is in three out of the 11 cases, we saw that it was a benign tumor. So with two patients, we ended with resection of the biliary fork. And in one patient, we only did a cholecystectomy. And this is, of course, a game changer. You know, if you have 11 patients and with three, you really change the process, what you're doing.
That is amazing.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of EndoCast. I'm your host, Leslie Bishop, and this is episode 25 with our physician guest, Dr. Anjali Rout from University Hospital Aachen. EndoCast is a GI-focused podcast for clinicians by clinicians presented to you by Boston Scientific. Together, we'll take a closer look at the data, techniques, and insights of endoscopy that matter most to listeners like you.
I am super excited to be here in Dublin.
Yeah.
At the ESGE meeting with you, and I'd love to just get to know you a little bit. So can you tell me about your background and how you got into surgery, and then how you then got into endoscopy?
Okay, yes. So I studied medicine, obviously, but I also have master degree in physics. And after that, I decided to do my residency in surgery, especially visceral surgery, which we have in Germany. It's a combination probably of something like oncologic surgery and general surgery. During that time, I already got contact with endoscopy because in Germany, some surgeons also do endoscopy. And I really thought this is very much interesting. So after my board certification, I subspecialized in surgical endoscopy, and it was a perfect match because I really liked the work there, but also it was also goes hand in hand with my research, which is on endoscopic tumor treatment with magnetic nanoparticles, where I use endoscopy as well.
Okay. And was there anything specific that was so interesting to you about endoscopy?
I think it's very interesting because you can use the skills that you also would use in the OR, but you have much less trauma for the patient. So I think especially with what is ongoing and research in endoscopy, you have so many benefits for the patient, you know, that they have small procedures where you can take out a big adenoma instead of a huge resection or something.
Okay. And so currently, is your practice mostly endoscopy? Is it mostly surgery? Is it mostly research? How does it break up?
I have a position as a physician scientist at the University Hospital of Aachen. And as that, I have a 50%, 50% job. So 50% I'm in research and I'm leading my own work group. And 50% I'm doing surgical endoscopy. And we have an interdisciplinary unit where we work hand in hand with our gastroenterologic partners.
Okay, now that's different than most hospitals in Germany, right? Most of them are not working surgery and endoscopy together.
In most hospitals, the gastroenterologist does all the endoscopies. There are some few hospitals where there's still historically just one surgical unit for surgical endoscopy and one gastroenterologic unit for endoscopy.
I'm assuming you've probably had some really amazing mentors over the years. Can you talk about that?
I had a lot of mentors during the whole time, and I think it's very, very, mentorship is very, very important. For a successful career. And this is not only that you just have one mentor. I had many very good clinical mentors, but I also, for example, had a very fantastic mentor during my postdoc at Dana-Farber in Boston, Alec Kimmelman, who taught me a lot about how to do science and how to motivate a group, for example. And also, was also part of structured programs for mentorship. For example, there was Brigitte Vollmer. And now I'm very happy because, for example, in Germany, we have an association of female surgeons, and there we have a structured program. And I'm very happy now that I'm in the position to be a mentor in such a structured program and to give my positive experience back.
Oh, I love that. Well, you did something, you can explain it, with the German Society for General Surgery. Were you mentoring fellows with that too?
This is the German Society for General and Visceral Surgery. DGAV, and with that, they have different work groups, for example, HPB surgery and so on and so forth. And one is for young surgeons. And I was a founding member of this work group for young surgeons. And for a couple of years, I was also the head of this Young Surgeons Association. And this, of course, again, with this female spotlight position, it was obviously okay that a female resident was the lead there. But of course, this led to a lot of questions. How do you combine surgery with anything else?
Well, what is the answer? How do you do it?
What we came up with was this, we called it lebenswerte Chirurgie, which is basically loosely translated, it's surgery worth living, because it was important for us that we don't just say female surgeons have the problem of combining family and workday life, but it's very important for everybody, because the male surgeon, of course, the young male surgeons, they want to educate their kids and see them grow up more and more too. So that's why we had different points there. One was obviously, you know, different work models where you have the possibility to see your kids, but also stuff like the calendar when you are on call is being done months before, because this is very important, because that you know when you're supposed to work and when you have free time. And also, for example, positive feedback culture, that you're not blamed if you make a mistake, but it's okay if you make a mistake. And you talk about how to avoid the mistake the next time.
So when you were working in the German society for the general surgeons, were you seeing, was it mostly women? Was it mostly men? Is that changing? Is the number of women increasing?
It is definitely increasing. So we just had a study accepted where we actually looked at how much time there is for educational students and for research during the normal working hours at a German university hospital. But with that, we also did a demography of the German surgeons, and there are 38 university hospitals in Germany. And at the level of the department heads, it's about 6% are female. At the level of the attending surgeons, it's about 20%. And at the level of the residents, it's 50%. And that has changed a lot during the last years.
Wow, that is a significant delta on those numbers. Is it just because, you know, to be the head, to be running everything, you're older, and so back then it was mostly men? Is that the main contributing thing, or are there other factors contributing to those disparities?
Yes, I think we are, again, at this point, mentorship, you know, role models. And the more role models you have, the more people see, and especially female surgeons, of course, see that it's possible to have a fulfilled life and still be head of the department or something, or an attending. And I think the more role models there are, then the more people go into that field. So that's why it will take some time, but we are getting there.
Okay.
And especially important because in Germany, 80% of the medical students are female.
Wow, 80%. That is a lot. That's almost a disparity against men. It's going to shift all the other way.
That's actually something that some surgeons, male surgeons, are worried about. That's something that we discuss at the congresses, yes?
I bet. They're saying 50 years from now, it's going to be the exact opposite problem.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. All right, let's shift to some clinical stuff. So tell me about your clinical practice. What's the focus of your practice?
I'm doing endoscopy. So basically what we're doing is gastroscopies and colonoscopies. As I said, we are in an interdisciplinary department. The ERCPs are done by our gastroenterologists. So that's why, for example, cholangioscopy, I didn't have any experience doing it during an ERCP. But with a new device, we have started to do intraoperative tumor mapping with the new cholangioscope. This is important because our hospital in Aachen, we are combined with Maastricht, and we are one of the leading centers for Klatskin tumors in Europe. Klatskin tumors are tumors that are located at the biliary bifurcation. And the thing is, normally the gold standard would be to do a trisectorectomy, where you take out 3/4 of the liver with a no-touch technique, so hyalur en bloc resection. But with this, of course, the patient always, you know, there are 8 segments of the liver, and he always remains only with 2 segments left. And what we've seen often is that if the tumor is not that big, that he can do a hemihepatectomy or something with the same oncologic outcome, where the patient, of course, doesn't go into the risk of liver failure postoperatively. And with this cholangioscope, an intraoperative tumor mapping, we did a small case series of 14 patients, and we were able to really see where the tumor ends and to define the resection margins.
Did it change the outcome? I'm assuming it's changing the outcome of what you're planning on doing.
Yes, definitely. So for this, for example, the small case series was 14 patients. In three, one must say, the tumor was already so big that we couldn't bypass it. In three patients, we did it through the cystic duct. In the others all, we already cut open the common bile duct and then went through the common bile duct. And actually, the most interesting thing is in three out of the 11 cases, we saw that it was a benign tumor. So with two patients, we ended with resection of the biliary fork. And in one patient, we only did a cholecystectomy. And this is, of course, a game changer. You know, if you have 11 patients and with three, you really change the process, what you're doing.
That is amazing. I mean, that's really amazing. So how did you even get interested or introduced to cholangioscopy? When you started doing endoscopy, did you learn cholangioscopy at that time?
No, actually not. So it was actually at a congress where I was at the Boston Scientific booth, and they showed me that they have this new, especially new skull angioscope that was specially made for surgeons, and I was able to play with that. And then I was invited to London where we learned it on, it was a very interesting concept, on pig kidneys.
Yes.
That were turned over so that we could use the cholangioscope there and practice it before we go into the patient.
What was the learning curve like for you? Was it hard to learn? Was it easy?
As I had a couple of years of endoscopic experience already, it was not that difficult. It's sometimes, so the usage of the scope and everything is very much, pretty much straightforward. What was difficult, or what is difficult and definitely different from a normal colonoscopy, for example, is that the bile duct is open and the surgeon, so my colleague, who is actually performing the resection or plans to perform this resection, tries to help me. And then it's very, you know, every little micrometer of movement is in the scope, of course, very, very much bigger. So that's sometimes, that was something that we had to learn, where we had a learning curve, but now we are very good with that.
If you were talking to a team, two people that were trying to do this, what would be the tip you would give them?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, that you talk, of course, like always communication. I think that you just talk with each other and say, don't move now because now I'm in, you know. You need some help to get into the bile duct, but then once you're in the bile duct, it's probably better to just leave it there. And that's, for example, one point.
I love that. Okay, so I'm curious where you see the future of surgical endoscopy going.
I wouldn't put so much stress on the surgical endoscopy because I don't think endoscopy is something that belongs either to the gastroenterologists or to the surgeons. I think the most important thing is to do it hand in hand together. But for surgeons, the importance of endoscopy, and this is doesn't really matter who does it, the importance is that there's so much development that it changes a lot. For example, with esophageal resection, before, if you had an anastomic leakage, you would always have to put the patient again in the OR, and there were very high mortality rates. And now with the endoscopic vacuum therapy, we treat all of them very nicely. And yes, the surgical complications gets better and better what you can do there. For example, there's more and more devices where you can do sewing and stuff like that, and where you can really replace surgery too.
Ooh, I love it. This has been fascinating. I really appreciate you coming on today, but I do want to ask one final just personal question.
Okay.
So you have a very accomplished career, and I'm just curious maybe what your biggest, what for you personally, what your biggest accomplishment is.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think my biggest accomplishment is definitely being a leader for a functioning work group now, you know, with female and male scientists and physicians. And because we talked about mentorship and I got a lot of out of that, but it's very interesting to see what it's like to be a leader. You know, you have a much different perspective on that. It's also very nice, of course, to be some kind of role model with that, especially, of course, for my female people in the group. But in my group, it's actually 50-50. It's evened out.
Oh, there we go. All right, I love that. Well, thank you. And thank you for coming on today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Endocast. please subscribe to the podcast and follow Boston Scientific Endoscopy on our Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn feeds. You can also visit our virtual education platform, EduCare. That's educare.bostonscientific.com and choose gastroenterology. The site features over 180 resources, including physician-led educational videos, lectures, case studies, device training videos, procedural tips, and techniques. Thanks for listening. Endocast listeners, an important disclaimer. These materials are intended to describe common clinical considerations and procedural steps for the use of reference technologies, but may not be appropriate for every case or patient. Decisions surrounding patient care depend on the physician's professional judgment in consideration of all available information for the individual case. Boston Scientific does not promote or encourage the use of its devices outside of their approved labeling. Case studies are not necessarily representative of clinical outcomes in all cases, as individual results may vary. Thank you.